Yo, what's the deal, cuz?
Hey, what's the deal, cuz? How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. I'm Dre Chilly, by the way.
And I'm AZ Shan.
And this is What's the Deal, Cuz?
Yes, the podcast where we discuss topics pertaining to the Black experience.
We hope you guys tune into the podcast regularly and that you enjoy the actual audio experience with us. Thank you. Yo, what's the deal, cuz?
Oh, nothing much. How you doing?
Man, all is good. You know, trying to, you know, stay ahead above the water and survive. You know how it is. What's new?
Oh, man, there's so much stuff going on in the news right now. I feel like, you know, we need to talk about because it's just crazy out here. This coronavirus stuff and everything else that's happening. So I just want to get your thoughts on all that.
Well, exactly. Well, if you talk about the coronavirus first, man, it's very interesting that I feel as if Governor Doug Ducey out here in Arizona had pretty much opened up the state relatively too soon. I understand the frustration of a lot of people that want to get back to work and, you know, want to be able to do a lot of social activities such as going shopping, going to the movie theaters, et cetera, dinners. But the reality of the situation is until they actually have some type of cure to the virus, I think everybody should just take the rest of the year off and just pretty much go to work and come home, man, and try to stay out of the way. That's just my opinion on it. You know, what's your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, I don't know that there's guaranteed going to be a cure, because if you look at the history of vaccines, like, it normally take, I think the fastest that they ever developed a vaccine, I was reading, was like 4 years or something like that. So, I mean, there's a possibility that it could take just as long to find some type of cure for this particular virus, or there's even a possibility that there is no cure. So right now I just see a bunch of scientists pretty much just throwing everything at it, trying to find treatments. And they have a couple of candidates for actual antiviral medicines or some type of vaccine. I think one of them's called like remdesivir or something like that. And that seems like it's, you know, pretty promising results as to a vaccine. But honestly, like, I'm kind of concerned about them just coming up with something too soon, because think about it, you got to go through clinical trials and all that type of stuff. And honestly, like, how do you know, how do you know, like, in those trials, or if you've rushed through some things, what the side effects might be for people that's, you know, getting the vaccine? Because there's some people that have adverse reactions to shots and stuff like that that they develop. So I'm kind of concerned on that. And then
without doubt. To me, it's a hit and pitch approach, because you got to figure, I honestly believe that the pharmaceutical companies already have a vaccination that they probably already developed and, you know, is ready for the general public to consume. I mean, the reality of it in the business aspect of it is that a lot of doctors' offices, a lot of urgent cares, a lot of hospitals, everybody is basically, I mean, look at it this way, right? People aren't even paying attention to this. All you got to do is go to like jobbing.com or indeed.com. Basically, anybody with any type of medical billing and coding and experience is hired on the spot. So I do think that if you people want to talk about a conspiracy, I think that a lot of insurance companies and a lot of people stand to benefit before the pharmaceutical companies. And it's kind of like one back scratches the other back. Like, hey, let us get our piece of the cake first. And then, you know,
oh, yeah.
So
you know it. Like, there's big money in this vaccine. So, you know, whoever actually develops something that ends up being the candidate or one of the candidates, they're going to make billions, you know what I'm saying, probably off of this. But my thing is, like, I think honestly that they probably do have something, but like the risks, you know, they're trying to weigh those risks, because if you think about it, a lot of these medicines and whatnot, if there's like a bunch of side effects, then it's not really worth it to pursue, you know, like you hear about, I don't know, like different, like birth controls that now all of a sudden was causing women to have all kind of issues and things like that, like not vaccines, but like just other medicines and things that, you know, people have had to take and they have side effects. So I would assume it's the same thing here. So they probably know that. And then it's like you have certain risks and they don't want to be sued. So I think that maybe that's part of it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily think that a cure is necessarily like always on the topic of discussion. Like, I don't know that that's going to be something that just ends up happening. Like, I definitely think pharmaceutical companies, if they just looking at their profits, they make more money on the treatment than the cure. You know what I'm saying? So
exactly. That's what's been going on for years. But it's interesting because one of the points that you just made reference to, that a lot of people have, they might have to take medicine that are treating side effects. So if I pretty much own, say, for instance, a lot of stock in Fred Meyers or a place like that, you know, and we have all of these subsidiary companies underneath us that might make, you know, combination medicines or things of that nature, we win them by default. So the cure will come in due time, just my opinion on it. But overall, I feel as if the state, our state in particular, was opened back up way too soon. We should
at least waited
a couple more months, especially about the stuff that's not necessary, like the restaurants. I understand a lot of restaurant owners and places like that, people want to go out and co-mingle, but by default, with the rest of the worldly events and things of that nature, this might be the perfect time and opportunity for us to just take a step back from it all and go ahead and do some self-reflecting and internalize yourself in the house.
People are more concerned about their money and they're more concerned about the economy. Like, for example, I was reading that a lot of wealthy people, they're not spending money like that because a lot of the hotels and hospitality industry is taking a hit because of the coronavirus and the risk of that as far as like catching it in, you know, larger settings and whatnot. So my thing is like, that's already slated to happen. So like, people felt like if they let this go on for much longer, that it was going to negatively impact the economy. But it's already going to do that because you're going to have all this, you know, starting and stopping, like stopping of business and then starting back up. Or, you know, you're going to have all these people that end up getting sick, have to call out, that costs the businesses money. So it's like, you know, honestly, it would have made more sense to actually have, what would have made sense is using the statistics to determine when you come, when, which states open up, you know, really looking at the statistics. Like if your state is in a decline in terms of new cases, then you can open up as far as like allowing certain things and then gradually do that. But you also have to make sure that there's no travel really coming in and out of your state while you do that. They could have did that. They could have used statistics to determine, okay, we have a significant drop in cases that's persisted for long enough to where it's more, but they didn't do that. The problem with a state like Arizona is that they never really had any type of measures. Yeah, we had a quote unquote stay at home measure, but did we really stay home? There was no mandate that said that we, you know, really had to do anything. Like, okay, yeah, you know, if they basically made the most loose restrictions possible. Like, okay, they had a stay-at-home order, but you know, if you were driving around, you could just say, yeah, I'm on my way to work, and nobody would bother you. You know what I'm saying? And then it was right, like
exactly.
So we never really shut down. So when people say, nope, yeah, we, you know, we open back up too soon, I would argue that we never really closed like this state. Like, that's, we never true, locked that's anything true, down.
When I say well, we shut down, I'm talking about like, you know, the night scene, the nightlife, the Fourth Avenues, you know, the Tempe Lakes, you know, the shopping malls, the movie theaters, the bowling alleys, places like that. That's what I'm
referring to. I would argue that they really didn't, because here in Phoenix, I believe that he shut it down for like maybe 2 weeks, if that, those type of things, and it was back up again. It wasn't like a, like people, if you look at the data, people felt like, you know, we were under a stay-at-home order for like 2 months, but really when you look back at how things actually transpired, it probably was only 2 weeks really of like you know,
actual things being like shut down. But, you know, look at it. Hey, this is where we at now. You figure, okay, we have the, I think, number two. We're right behind Florida in terms of
new cases. It's crazy.
Yeah, like 2,000 new cases between both counties, Maricopa as well as Phoenix. So, you know, where do we go from here?
Everybody keeps, like, trying to make the argument that it's about the protests and stuff. But honestly, like, I was reading that, you know, in Minnesota, they, like, looked at the stats on people that got the coronavirus and said that they caught it from a large gathering, you know, from the time when the protest started there onward. And they said like 1% of the people caught it that way. So I feel as though like there's a risk, obviously, if you had a rally and people are shoulder to shoulder and half the people ain't wearing masks and whatnot, then yeah, like you're probably at high risk of catching it. But a lot of the things I've seen online, the people are doing at least the peaceful protesting, they are wearing masks. And, you know, even the non-peaceful protesting, people wearing masks because they don't want to be caught, you know what I'm saying? So like my thing is like I don't think it's all from that. I honestly noticed, especially here in Arizona, that as soon as that quote-unquote stay-at-home order was lifted, like literally I went to the gas station maybe a week later and I saw like only a few people wearing masks, like maybe half. And then like another week or so later, I went back to get some more gas or something. And I was literally one of two other people who was wearing a mask. Like I haven't really gone out hardly at all from my home, but the times I have had to go to the store, I don't see people wearing masks. It's like, as soon as, you know, they lifted everything, people did that for a second, a little hot second, and then they went back to their old habits. And even now, like with the cases rising, I didn't just see all these people wearing masks. Now it's like been mandated that people have to wear masks, and people feel some type of way about it, and I don't get it.
Well, it's human nature. A lot of people, you got to keep in mind, man, a lot of people live in this world with some form of entitlement. So whereas they might feel that if the government is handing down some type of direct order, you know, a lot of people take offense to that, but unbeknownst to them, it's, hey, it's to save you, your loved ones, your children, you know, the elder people that reside within the community. But the way I see it, like I said, hey, I'm a firm believer in keeping your distance right now. I'm more or less taking the wait and see approach. I think that this year is pretty much a wash. I don't think anybody should really be doing any traveling this year.
Right.
Avoid large crowds and just, you know, take the year off to reflect, man. This year, what an interesting year, man, to kick off a new decade. You know, let's talk about that and, you know, some other subjects and topics. What else you got?
Well, did you hear that D.L. Hughley, he got the coronavirus now?
I don't know how true it is, but I had seen.
No, he said he did. Like he did. Yeah, he did a video. Like he was performing, and I watched the video where he passed. He passed the hell out, man. He was all the way like out cold. You know, he was performing.
Yeah, they dragged him off the stage and everything like that. Yeah. Oh yeah, I seen the video.
Yeah,
so
and
he did test positive for the coronavirus.
Yeah, he tested positive because they took him to the hospital right after that. And he said, you know, that he basically did a follow-up interview or something. He must be like okay enough to where he can, you know, talk to people and whatnot. But he basically was like, you know, I was asymptomatic. I didn't have any symptoms of the like the typical symptoms of the virus. And he said that like basically like he was doing all this touring, and so he was, you know, a little tired or whatnot, but that thing, you know, had him passing out on stage. So it's just interesting, like how, you know, a lot of these little quote unquote symptoms that they claim that, you know, come along with it, not everybody's really getting that, you know. And I even just saw, just a couple of minutes before I started talking to you, I saw, you know, Chadwick Boseman, the dude from Black Panther, now he's in the hospital, and I'm like wondering whether he's got the coronavirus, because folks been saying that they thought he looked a little sick since the beginning of this year. So I don't know.
I'll tell you this, man, it's definitely real, because, you know, earlier this year I was bedridden for about a week, but, you know, my doctor told me it was a real nasty case of bronchitis. and it was borderline pneumonia. So, you know, we all got to be careful out there and continue to wash your hands and, you know, try to stay in good health. DL, you know, unfortunately, you know, talent, but hey, the touring aspect of it, sometimes, man, we just got to sit down. You know.
Well, also, like, you know, I think he has diabetes, you know, and I didn't know that, but until recently. And it's just like, if you have something like that, you just can't, like, if you just can't be out here in crowds of people trying to perform and whatnot, like, you know, especially if the people aren't wearing masks and whatnot, like, you know, you're probably going to catch something, you know? I mean, it's just the nature of the business.
You can't expose yourself, yeah. You can't put yourself out there at risk. But, hey, it goes to show you, like, the economics behind a lot of the stuff that's taking place where people might feel the need to take the risk to go out there to continue to support their family and their loved ones and earn a living. So, you know, that's a very interesting twist as it relates to the whole coronavirus and people still wanting to be able to feed, you know, their family and make money. So,
yeah, but you know, he got money though. Like, my thing is, I think that
you got money, but you got bills. You still got
that is true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but look at the medical bills you probably gonna have as a result of having to, you know, I don't know. So luckily he's got money. He's rich to a certain extent. So he's not like the rest of us that gotta go to a 9-to-5 every day and in order to, you know, make ends meet. So it makes it easier for him to, like, get the best treatment, make decisions, whatnot. But people like us, like, or people that don't even have what we have, they don't even have those type of options, you know. So it's
that's
just
really true. So we do have a lot of stuff in that regard.
Did I tell you they had, you know, that I've just been hearing all these different scares people have been telling me about, but you know, I'm just hoping that people stay safe and, you know, take it serious, you know, and I'm hoping I don't catch you. That's all I hope for. But, you know, and 2020 has been a crazy year, man. All this crazy stuff been popping off. Like, they even talking about, did you hear about the Aunt Jemima and the,
Uncle Ben? Well, yeah, I'm all of all support of that, all of that type of negative stereotypical imagery. It all needs to pretty much come down. That's my opinion on it, because it continues to perpetuate the same stereotypes that were hit, all those negative connotations associated with Black women being mammies and, you know, making pancakes and taking care of, you know, the master's children and feeding everybody in the big house. And then Uncle Ben, you know, was a rice planter, you know, couldn't read, couldn't write, could barely walk. And that's why, hence, Uncle Ben out there with the broke leg, pig leg Joe type of imagery. So as far as I'm concerned, it all needs to come down. And the same thing how I feel about the statues, all of that, you know. And then I'm not trying to say that we need to rewrite history, because you can't rewrite history. But in tearing all of that stuff down, we're not going to continue to glorify the wrongs of history. And
right.
We have an opportunity to rewrite history in a positive imagery. You know, I find it interesting that a lot of people are upset about a lot of these Confederate flags. And I know the real reason why a lot of people that if you are in support of, you know, Sons of the Confederacy in places like that in certain regions of the country, why they might be upset. But why not John Brown, one of that Quakers and abolitionists? How come we didn't have a statue? This is a person, a white person, who lost his life trying to, you know, free a people when he could have just basically fell into his position into society. You know, I don't see a John Brown statue, you know.
Exactly.
I don't see a Crispus Attucks statue, you know, the first African-American who lost his life in the Revolutionary War. Where is his statue at? So, you know, if you're going to tell history, be honest about history. And don't lie, don't sugarcoat it, don't poo-poo it, don't try to make it something that's
the thing that's funny to me is, like, nowhere else in any civilization will you see icons or, like, you know, imagery or whatnot, statues of the people that lost, you know? Like, when you go throughout history, the people that lost, you know, their stuff was historically taken down. So I don't understand what is the whole thought process behind we want to celebrate, you
it's
know,
Confederacy.
Like, my thing is, like, y'all lost. Like, what is there to celebrate besides the fact that y'all used to, like, basically use people to do all, you know, to do things for you, basically. Like, so I don't see what culture is being preserved. I don't understand that aspect, because I'm like, okay, I can see if you were talking about the culture of the South as a whole, but like, that doesn't, the Confederate flag doesn't represent the culture of the South. How does it represent the culture of the South then, more so than any other aspects of the South or whatnot? So my thing is, like, you know, it's always going to be tied to racism because of the fact that, you know, that was the reason why it was in place. You know what I'm saying?
Once again, that's just the fact. People got to be honest. The Confederacy and the Confederate soldiers, these people were the first domestic terrorists. That's what they were. You can't sugarcoat it and call them generals, this, that, and the third. When they formed the Constitution, it said in order to form a more perpetual union, you know, or something to that effect. But it talks about, you know, it being perpetual, meaning that they, the states, once they joined statehood, you can't succeed from the union. So the fact that they tried to start their own separate country within the country was the first violation, and hence classifies them as domestic terrorists. And then not to even take into the account of how they treated, you know, Black people in the South, and, you know, used us as slaves from pretty much 1619 to 1865. So, you know, that's the history.
Like I said, I don't understand what are you preserving, really? I mean, because we already get taught in history all about, like, that's why I always said that, you know, why is it that from, like, second grade all the way till 12th grade, we got to hear about the founding fathers all the time? Like, why do we have to, there's no other topics, when you go to school, there's no other topics that keep getting reiterated over and over and over and over again. Like, once you talk about one subject, you move on to another subject. But here in this country, like, you have to learn about, you know, government and all this type of stuff, literally over and over again. And frankly speaking, the kids aren't retaining it anyway, you know? So it's like, there has to, one, be a better way of teaching history, but two, it's like, why are we spending so many years covering topics that these people don't even know? Most people I remember reading a poll, most Americans don't even know who the first five presidents were. They couldn't even name them. If you had to poll them on the street, they couldn't even tell you. You know what I'm saying? So, like, they'll say, like, you know, all different type of answers, and it's not the right answer. So, like, my thing is, like, obviously they're not retaining that information. So, like, why do we focus so much on those things? And if, you know, when we could delve more into, okay, second grade, we're going to focus on this particular aspect of American history, then this, that, and the third. And then by the time you get to like 11th or 12th grade, when you're like learning about government stuff, you don't have to keep going back over other stuff, you know? So I just feel like people don't realize that, like, they ram the same stuff into us over and over again. You know, the founding fathers are so great, blah, 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 you know? But it's like, you know, like, where's that information, like, getting us now? Like, you know what I'm saying? If you're not utilizing that information. So my thing is, when people want to talk about preserving the history of the South and whatnot, it's like, we already learned all that.
I mean, and look how disingenuous it is anyway, because, like you just referred to, when you learn a lot of that information in grade school, they're not telling you the hardcore, honest truth. Right. As it relates to history, they're not telling you that the founding fathers were slave masters, and hey, you know, these people were bad men. They created a lot of, you know, they created a lot of death, a lot of, you know, poverty as it relates to even, you know, certain areas up north, you know, they're just not honest about the history.
They're not honest, and then they perpetuate the same stuff, stereotypes, over and over again. Like, how many times do I have to learn about Christopher Columbus to find out everything that you're telling me about this man is false? Why are you not teaching me that? But we learn about Christopher Columbus, like, literally second through fourth grade. Why is that? That makes no damn sense. Like, yeah, we don't need to learn about this man the same stuff. Oh, you know, he discovered America, which is false. We don't need to learn that same narrative over and over again. So it just, to me, it's like, you know, when people
say indoctrination.
But let me just, yes, indoctrination. So my thing is, when people say, well, I'm preserving the history of the South, by, you know, celebrating the Confederate flag and whatnot. My thing is, like, we already celebrate the history of the South and whatnot, and all these different things.
How can you call yourself a true American? And this is where you got to call people out on any hypocrisy. How can you call yourself a true American and claim that you love the United States of America and still support the Confederacy? As I stated earlier, they were the first domestic terrorists. So it's a double standard, or not even a double standard. It's basically, you know, you're playing both sides of the coin. You know, it's like talking out of the side of your neck. I'm proud to be an American, but then again, you got the Confederate flag. That makes no sense. They tried to secede from the Union.
People will always justify whatever it is that they feel like that is part of their quote-unquote childhood. Like, for example, when I was, when we were just earlier talking about Aunt Jemima, for example, I was reading a New York Times article about the whole issue, about how PepsiCo, which now owns that brand or whatever, is completely taking it all the way off. Like, they're completely changing the whole look, and I think they might even be removing the name. People were like, oh, well, that's not right, you know, that's a part of my childhood, and all this stuff about how, like, you know, we can't just, you know, basically go back through history just so people feel better and take away certain things. I had to break down people like this, like, because I think a lot of people don't know the history, and they don't care to know the history. But my thing is, like, the whole issue behind Aunt Jemima, she just wasn't just some black woman on the cover. She wasn't just a mammy. Literally, the whole, you know, in our family, the saying was that, which I believe is true, is that, you know, back in those days, black women, when we were slaves, we were forced to nurse white children. So to where actually it created this weird kind of like bond that you have with the child or whatnot. You know what I'm saying? To where, you know, these mammies, quote unquote, were not the biological children. Biological parent to those children, but those children would, you know, oftentimes call them mama, you know what I'm saying? And so the saying went in our family that, you know, one of the kids called the slave woman mama, and they said, the slave master said, that ain't your mama. And that's where Aunt Jemima came from. So it's like, when you explain to people, like, no, that's where that name comes from. It's a minstrel show. It's literally... Right. You know, it's a characterization of, and it makes black women look dumb. You know what I'm saying? Like, because it's like trying to poke fun at, you know? And so my thing is, like,
well, let me say this real quick. I mean, Shani, because you mentioned, you said people don't know the history. People don't want, like, want to know the history, and stop explaining, because at the end of the day, a lot of people who are on the opposite end, they're not dumb. So, you know, if one wants to, hell, this is almost Google University nowadays. So if one really wanted to find out what really happened and took time out and say, okay, I really want to know the true aspect and give it to me, like I kept saying earlier, brutal, and give it to me raw. Don't sugarcoat it. So that, you know, I mean, I don't have any problem to, you know, to answer your question. I don't have any problem personally with, like I said, all of it can come down, all of that symbolism.
But my argument was, like, F your, you know, oh, your feel goods and your, oh, this was from my childhood. There's a lot of stuff from your childhood that shouldn't be a part
of your childhood. Right, it wouldn't make it right, exactly, just because something was a part of your childhood.
It's pancakes, for crying out loud. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah. It's not that deep, you know?
No, what it is that one person's comfort, or let me rephrase this, a certain set of people's comfort is predicated on another set of people's discomfort.
Right, but it's a double standard, because, like, let's say we had, I don't know, like, some cereal, and it was called, like, Peckerwood or something like that, and it had, like, an actual, like, woodpecker, white woodpecker with a red head, people would be like, oh no, that's not right. But see, that's the thing, the opposite doesn't exist for other races of people. particularly white people. That's what I think the issue is. It's like, you know, no, you're not going to understand what that's like unless somebody was to come up with something that's offensive to you. And then you would be like, oh, this whole cancel culture situation arises. And they always throw that up in people's faces, like, oh, people of color are all about cancel culture. No, we're about, like, not, we're not trying to be on that BS. Like,
no, you're not going to continue to disrespect us as a people.
Exactly. And it's
part of being everybody's kicking post and everybody's kicking dog. You know, the dog that basically, you know, it doesn't holler when you whistle, you know, at it, you know, and you can kick the damn dog 15, 20 times and the dog is just still laying here. It is good to see that our generation, enough is enough. And this is the new age, the media, and we are doing our part as it relates to the council culture. And it is real, because the money stops a lot of the bull. And yeah, a lot of these companies are starting to realize, like, hey, if we don't get our act right together, it's real. That black dollar is real. And we're not going to spend that money with your company, period. If we find out that you have these negative stereotypical views as it relates to black people and the products or whatever it is that you call yourself putting out, we're not going for it.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely power in the black dollar. You know, I just feel as though personally, everything can't be done at the expense of the black dollar. Like, the only reason why you're doing these things is because of the black dollar or whatnot.
It's fake. Just like a lot of these companies just recently, everybody's Black Lives Matter.
Right.
You know, it's fake. It's done from a disposition, to try to appease and to try to make it seem like, hey, we won't tolerate any racism.
Oh, we're allies.
But we won't tolerate any racism, but prejudice, being prejudiced is fine. So
exactly. So it's just like, well, you're just creating a situation where it's like business as usual. So my thing is, like, you know, more needs to be done to teach the next generation, you know what I'm saying, how not to be, and to educate people on all different people's, you know, history and all those type of things. Because that's literally what I believe creates these type of situations, you know.
Exactly, lack of education with it. But, you know, it's also how a child is raised. You know, if you're raised to think that a certain set of people, or black people in particular, let me speak bluntly, is less than or not equal to you, then you got some serious mental issues, period. And you don't understand history. You know, black people have given pretty much everything to this country. And to state otherwise is disingenuous, and it would be false, and you would look like the liar that you are. And I'm willing to debate anybody that, you know, hears our podcast and wants to come on and state otherwise.
Right. So in other news, you know, there's all these things going on with the protests and whatnot. And, you know, people are basically, it's this awakening. You know, I want to touch at some point a little bit on the protests, but I don't want to go too far into it, because I feel as though, you know, that's like a horse that's already, you're beating a dead horse. Like, you know, there's all kind of people already talking about those type of things. But I just definitely see, as a result, it's, I like the fact that it's educating people on where their biases lie. Even if, you know, you're black, you have biases, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if you had seen the whole, are you familiar with Doja Cat?
And see, a lot of people, and let me just speak on that real quick, and then I'll let you, let me just get my 2 cents off on that. I'm not really with all of that, giving somebody the leeway and stating that, oh, this person is a tragic mulatto, this person is confused, this, that, and the third. This person kind of had self-hate or self-reflecting issues growing up. That's the type of, you know, I'm going to use the word, that's the type of fuckery that we allowed to exist and manifest itself for years. And Doja Cat is a part of the cancel culture. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, I was never a fan of her music anyway. I barely knew who she was, but I looked a little bit into her background and seen some of those old posts and stuff like that. And to me, she's not a tragic mulatto. She's just a typical self-hating woman who has issues with her identity. Right. Because at the end of the day, regardless of her, the fact that her mom may be Jewish, a white Jewish woman, she in America, she's classified as being black, or, you know, all of this other, as you know personally, I don't get into the schematics of a person's complexion, or I don't play that, oh, this person is biracial. I'm of the old school belief in which what used to be the law, the one drop rule, which is if you got black in you, any black in you, you're black. So that's my opinion on her, but I wasn't too familiar with her music as an artist or anything like that. To me, she's just like the average runner of the mill. She's kind of somewhere insignificant. I don't think that her music, you know, it didn't have any type of message that
right.
any
of it don't the kids be, made it with. So it don't be like, about anything, really, in my opinion. But my thing is, like, you know, like you said earlier, like, she does have some self-hate issues, which, you know, probably stem from her upbringing or whatnot. And so, like, we're not going to use that as an excuse, though, because first of all, you know, she's claimed that she, like, you know, has been in chat rooms and whatnot her whole life, and like she researches stuff. So my thing is, if you research so tough, then you should know, you should be researching yourself, you should know more about yourself. And I think that she, you know, a lot of the stuff that she was saying, she felt like she was being misconstrued. So for people that don't know who this lady is, she's a hip-hop artist, and she basically went on this app called Tiny Chat, and she was like placating to these like white supremacist people. So she was, I think they were calling it race play. She claimed she wasn't doing that, but like that's what it looked like in the videos I saw. Like she was playing up the fact that she's mixed in order to get the white men to demean her on purpose, and she was getting some kind of like sexual gratification from that, like, you know, like, oh yeah, call me the N-word, yeah, oh baby, you know, that type of stuff. So it was kind of like, I don't know, to me it was like, first of all, you a weirdo, like who does that, first of all, like so my thing was like, I always kind of felt like she was a weirdo anyway, like first of all, because like she had, when I was first made aware of her, it was this song she had called like Moo or something, like it was about a cow, and I mean the song was kind of catchy, but it was dumb, it was just, it didn't have no meaning behind it. It was her dressed up in like an anime cow suit, like it was crazy, and I was like, this woman is like, she's out there, she's weird, she's a little off, you know, when I saw that. And then it's funny because a couple of years ago, back when Beyonce was doing the Coachella tour, I went to Coachella, and Doja Cat actually was one of the acts that was at Coachella that same year. And she just had like a little small little venue at the little festival. It wasn't, you know, it was real low key. She wasn't on anybody's like main stage, because again, she's really not a factor, honestly, but especially back then, you know, she was just kind of like,
even now, I mean, most people,
yeah, she was just kind of making a name for herself. So I remember one of my friends really wanted to see her, because I guess she used to be a big fan of hers for whatever reason, and we went, and I was just like, okay, it's a vibe or whatever, but like all she talks about in her songs is my coochie this, my poom poom that, like she doesn't really have a message, you know. And she's like, yeah, she's so lit.
Stop behavior, basically, is what,
yeah, she glorifies stop behavior. I mean I hate to say that as a woman, like I hate to, you know, I'm not saying that she's a thought, and I'm not saying that like people that listen to her music are that either, but I think that she glorifies that image of like, I value my coochie, like my coochie's made of gold or something, like, you know, like everything, like what our family used to say was, you know, your coochie ain't made of gold, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, woman should put all their value in that, because first of all, that's not all there is to being a woman. I mean, there's women that don't have the ability to, you know, give birth, to have children, and all different types of things, you know, have people of different orientations that identify as women, you know. So it's like, to be a woman isn't all about your coochie, you know what I'm saying, and what that brings to the table, you know. So I never resonated with her message, if she even has a message. So I just thought it was interesting that she was involved in this controversy, and the fact that she like got back on there on recently on Instagram or something. This is the whole reason why she's even a topic right now, is she went back up there to try to like get back with music and, you know, gain her followers back. And people were like, no, you didn't think we were kidding when we said we were canceling you are canceled. And so she, you know, had to go back into the shadows somewhere. So that's the latest.
Well, that's good because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I don't, you know, that's not really my thing. I don't, you know, I can listen to a song for a couple minutes, and if the artist isn't really talking about anything, you know, I'm going on to the next song. So, like, I did hear that she put out some weak-ass apology that most of the general public was able to look through and see that it was bullshit. And, right. You know, it is what it is as far as she's concerned. You know, on to the next one. Don't wish any, you know, harm to come to the girl's way, but like I just referred and I kept saying, the cancel culture is real. I know I would never download or support any of her music or anything like that. So,
right. I mean, what I will say is, like I said, I think that people like herself, it's important to, like, you know, see those type of people, because again, we're going through this great awakening, you know, so to speak, where people are opening their eyes and realizing, like, you know, everything that, you know, you see isn't what meets the eye. So I think that it's important because it opens up a bigger discussion about, you know, our people and the biases that we have and how we play into those type of things.
True.
Even with the whole light skin, dark skin, all these different colorism issues, I think it's important.
Plus the old divide and conquer tactic that was, you know, perpetuated through slavery, and it taught us to put value on certain things. If you got certain benefits for being light skin on the damn plantation, but at the end of the day, you were still a slave. So if you got, you know, if you got to sleep in the attic, or you got a different sack of clothes, they might have been kept you a little bit warmer or in the winter, and then a little bit cooler in the summer. I guess any type of little perks was better than, let me rephrase that, some people think that those perks, you know, was beneficial. And as you fast forward in today's, when people who put emphasis on complexion and things of that nature. But as far as I'm concerned, I, like I always say, you know, the comedian Paul Mooney has a joke that I like, you know, and he once said, I like my white people white, meaning that, you know, I don't like them too hip. I like them white, meaning that, you know, they're straight shooters. They tell you what it is and you know what it is. I don't like them too hip, you know, because unfortunately that puts a lot of salt in the game, where a lot of people think and they go around and they think that any of those little trinkets that they might have got in the slavery days, and unfortunately, like I said, it's still perpetuated and carried out today, like as if it means anything. Like, it means nothing in the grand scheme of things, because if you're still underneath some type of, you know, systematic racism, you know, which America is, then it doesn't matter. Just because you get a few little extra trinkets, that it means nothing in the grand scheme of things. It's the equivalence of begging for a piece of the damn pie, and, you know, the fat cat at the top got the bakery. You know, he ain't asking for a piece of the pie. He got the bakery. I can bake as many as I want. So that's,
you know, I think that my problem with the whole thing is that, you know, Black people tend to focus on our issues, like, with that, without, like, actually putting the onus on where it really is an issue at. Because, yeah, we can talk about slavery and light skin, dark skin, all that type of stuff, but honestly, it's perpetuated today, not just within our community. It's, you know, white people, they...
Once again, let me stop you right there, though, because I see where you're going with this, and I don't want to make any assumptions. I think I know where you're going with this.
What do you mean?
But once again, when you even... See, that's... Whenever you say things of that nature, like, well, even if it is carried out in white society, such as, like, you know, film, television, print, internet, whatever the case
it's may not be. Just that, it's even how you're perceived, it's how people interact again, with you, when you it's put, opportunities that you have.
That's creating a buffer class in a sense, because when you
we're not start, the ones that created it, they're the ones and they are the ones that perpetuate it. So my argument is that until white people let me finish. But until white people stop putting so much credence into it, white black people,
they're not going to. It's the old adage, it's divide and conquer. If as long as I can get a set of people to continue to internally fight about trivial things that in the grand scheme of things it doesn't matter anyway, then it just and what I was saying is whenever you continue to, that's essentially trying to live up to white people's standards, essentially, like by it's like almost begging. Give me an opportunity, I'll show you that, you know, a person.
I'm not saying begging or anything. I'm just saying that, like, we always talk about it within our community, but we don't talk about the fact that it's not just about, because people always talk about slavery, it's perpetuated in today in terms of how we treat our own people.
True.
How other people treat us, and we have to call a thing and say that this is really an issue. Well, the longer that you act like, oh, that's, you know, that's not that big of a deal, and oh, this, that, and the third, the more that you can't address the issue. The problem is that you have to celebrate, you know, blackness, like, in its full effect. You know what I'm saying? It's okay to be black.
That's the point that I was making, though. I was trying to make, like, to me, like, that's just where I'm kind of always, like, I would never understand that, like, at all. And I'm not in a position to want to even try to understand that, because the way I see it, a slave is a slave. If you're going through some type of systematic, and I get what you're saying as well, I'm not trying to take away from what you're saying, but it makes no difference, because like I just gave the example, and not trying to equate it to slavery, but you got to understand that's where a lot of that stuff is rooted in. You know, you think back, you figure, you know, you had Moors, they were Romans, but it wasn't a black Roman, he was a Roman who happened to be a Moor.
Really know that. So, like, the whole argument with the Roman thing is, like,
I mean, honestly, we don't know
all that type of stuff,
hang on. That's just an example that I was throwing out there. But I could even take it to, like, the American aspect of it.
If you think about it, Dre, America is the modern day Rome. And I do feel as though Rome had these same issues, because if you look at history, you know, there weren't that many black Romans that ascended to generals, and there was a few, but not in the same. So I do think that it's just something that wasn't written in history or orally. Maybe it was oral tradition or something like that. But I do think that that racism was definitely alive and well in ancient Rome, especially since you think about, you know, ancient Rome, where was that at? That's modern day Italy, is basically those same people. So it's like, and they have a lot of those same issues when it comes to race and all those type of things. So I just don't believe that it wasn't an issue back then. I think it was always an issue. Anytime you have a society where you have,
as it relates to our country here, to me, like, this is just my opinion. I'm not saying everybody got to agree with my opinion. In my opinion, I just think, like I said, a slave is a slave. All of the, because you had the Melungeon people, you had the Dominicker people, you had the term red bone that's used currently now. You know, and a lot, as you alluded to, a lot of people don't understand the history behind these, were classified as individual groups of people who could pass. They were what they called the term passing. They could pass for being white. But when they got around real white people knew white. So it's like, no, they didn't allow. That's why you go back and you look at a lot of those old census cards and those, you know, toll rolls. They would basically classify new people as being mulattoes. That's where hence the term mulatto comes from. So if any type of benefit was to be gained, it was, as far as, you know, if you fast forward,
occur from 1865 to 1965. What was Jim Crow? What was on? Because as far as I'm concerned, it didn't make any difference in regards to one's complexion. If your ass is black or considered a mulatto, you had to take your ass to the colored only restroom. You know, so I mean, I get what you're saying. Don't fast forward out of the Jim Crow era, and you fast forward 55, 60 years, and it's still an issue. But placating, because to me, when you say, like, we have to explain it to other people, and it's basically...
I didn't say we had to explain it. I said that they need to, white America needs to own up to the fact that they have those issues with race. They have the problem of only casting lighter skinned people for these parts, because until you force them, that's what my argument, I think you are, misinterpreting or, you know, kind of talking while I was talking. So, but what I was trying to explain is that until you call them out on that, you know, they're going to continue business as usual, because that's what makes them comfortable to them. Because white people have to, a lot of times, in order to have black people in their world, they have to kind of remove their blackness. That's what they do. They do that in order to relate to you. You know what I'm saying? They feel like they have to, you know, not see quote unquote color. So that removes the part of you that makes you who you are in order for them to make you palatable to them. So that's a problem. We need to be calling that out.
But why acquiesce to another?
It's not acquiescing. It's calling black people that's in those positions of power need to call that out.
I misinterpreted what you were saying. I'm thinking that it's like some form of like people, like black people have to acquiesce to whatever it is.
No, I'm saying they need to call them out, and white and people that are participating in those type of things need to be called out for what they're doing, so that they can realize that, you know, if they didn't realize before this, that this is a problem and this is perpetuating these same issues. So that what I'm basically arguing is that this same cancel culture that's taking place should be taking place. If you really want to talk about advancing a race of people, it should be calling out the people, the things, the organizations that participate in
that. Okay, cool. And cloning some of our own. Okay, I see.
Exactly. You know, like, you know, wow. If you look at an ad, and Shea Moisture don't have enough people of all different backgrounds and all different skin tones, then you call that out.
Right. True. Very true. Very true. I think the hip hop as of recently, I want to say maybe the last, I think we had a conversation about this before. I would say maybe over the last decade, last 10 years, hip hop has been doing a very good job in regards to diversifying the video music models and things of that nature, and making sure that they have a various assortment of black women in the actual videos and things of that nature, as opposed to, you know, you go back a little bit further, they did have a certain look or a certain a standard of beauty that one perceived as being beauty, you know.
Well, you know, I think that has its place or whatnot. But honestly, like, you know, we're transitioning to a period in time where videos aren't being made like that. You know,
none of that shit really matters.
So more so people focus on, you know, you might have all these video people and women models and whatnot of all different backgrounds and different skin tones, especially if they identify as black, but who are you taking home at night? You know what I'm saying? That's what people focus on more. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, people are gonna always have their opinion on that type of stuff. But it's to me, you know, if you notice, I'm just never one who really tripped off of a person getting with somebody.
No, I don't care.
Like outside of their race or whatever the case may be. It's how you go about it. Now, if you interracially do that, but don't walk around and act as if this person is like a come up. Like, that's what I
think. Exactly. So like, that's what I think needs to be called out, because, like, for example, like, you know, you have a lot of rappers that date all different types of women. It's not a problem, you know what I'm saying? But it's like you have rappers and singers, for example, the first that comes to mind as far as the singer is Chris Brown, that they elevate women that have a little bit of Asian and Black in the ancestry. Like I like my women light skin, or I like my women this way. And there's nothing wrong with describing whatever your preference may be, but don't make it as though that's better. And that's what something I've noticed that he does.
Just put an emphasis, like this fake emphasis on putting, like, to make it seem or sound more exotic than what it is. And then when you go to, like, say, for instance, you know, the chick might be Black and Filipino, you know, and then you go to the Philippines and you see, oh, it's basically like a poor-ass third-world country. So this false sense of putting some type of exoticness in front of the Black, instead of saying she's Black of Asian descent, they say, oh, she's of Asian descent and she got a Black kid. No. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not even just, you know, it's not even just, you know, finding those type of women attractive. You know, I mean, I think people gravitate to whatever they feel as though is different, you know, but it's taking it a step further and saying, you know, these are the only kind of women that I'm going to bag. Like, I only like my women this way, and they got to be mixed with something. I feel, I can't remember what the words were, but those were pretty much the undertones of what he was saying, or if not what he exactly expressed. I'd have to search Google search the exact thing that he said, but to that effect, that's what he said. So those type of people, they must be canceled, I feel as though. Now, if you just dating somebody of a different race, okay, so, you know, like, especially if you've dated all different types of women, Black women, white, you know, whatever your flavor is, who cares about that? But if you go out of your way to say that one less than whatnot, that's not cool.
Oh, this woman is the goddess, she's my trophy case, she's done so much for me, she's been like, yeah, that's what it comes across as, like, being condescending.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, with exalting your woman if you're married to her. Like,
no,
if
I'm talking from a racial standpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm talking from a racial standpoint. Like, if you went out of your way to make this woman who might not be Black sound like, oh, it's just oh so better, life is oh so great, and like you're not having issues since you started to date interracially, that's when, you know, it kind of comes across as being, not kind of, it comes across as being coonish, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, you have a lot of people that say that, and you know, but on the flip side, you have a lot of people say, well, you know, those Black women weren't interested in me, and they did this stuff. There's a whole, I mean, we have a whole podcast.
Just that's on, a whole nother podcast.
It's crazy. That's a whole nother topic.
What else do we got on queue?
I mean, you know, that's what I got to talk about right now.
All
right.
Thank you guys for tuning in. We greatly appreciate you guys for listening to What's the Deal Cuz podcast.
I'm Dre Chili.
And I'm AZ Shan.
Make sure you guys subscribe to all of our platforms that we're located on, and please support. And we look forward to uploading more material.
Thank you.